It's here and now. The world's newest country began peace talks today in the hopes of not becoming the world's shortest-lived country. Delegations from South Sudan's two warring factions meet in Ethiopia. South Sudan's loyalties are split between the largely Dinka supporters of President Salva Kiir and rebels, mostly young boys from the newer tribe, who've lined up behind the country's former vice president, Riek Machar. NPR's Gregory Warner just spent a week in South Sudan and is now back in Nairobi, Kenya. Greg, the peace talks are scheduled to start as fighting continues in Bor, which we know is just 75 miles from South Sudan's capital, Juba. So tell us more first about what's going on right now on the ground.
Sure. I mean, the fight for Bor is interesting not only because of where it is, just north of the capital, but also who is doing the fighting. So on Riek Machar's side, it is composed of soldiers who have defected from the South Sudanese Army, the SPLA, but there are also civilians called the White Army, and they wear no uniform at all. They're legendary because they have a white ash spread upon their faces for apparently to prevent against bug bites. But anyway, these guys are a very ethnically driven militia. They are composed solely of Nuer youth. That's the tribe of Riek Machar. And they are bent on ethnic killing. So what's happened in Bor is that the people there knew that not only were these fighters coming, but the White Army, the dreaded White Army, was coming. Everybody in the town has fled, some 75,000 people. Many of them ending up just north of Bor in this kind of swampy pasture land. So not only do we have an ongoing firefight between the SPLA and Riek Machar's forces, but also a potential humanitarian disaster where an outbreak of cholera is easily possible. There's no food, no medical care available for those people.
Well, we're reading a spokesperson for the International Red Cross saying this is the largest single identified concentration of displaced people in South Sudan so far. But you mentioned this white army. What an image of these faces smeared with this white ash, and a lot of them boys. And we're reading that some members of the government forces in Bor are saying they don't want to fight because they don't want to kill kids.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're saying. We will have to wait until the dust clears to find out what exactly is going on. Clearly, this army has repulsed the SPLA, and maybe that's because the SPLA, as they have said to me, wanted to avoid killing kids. And there was also something where the White Army and the other soldiers were using human shields. So you have this kind of warfare. However, the SPLA is moving in now. We'll see if they take their gloves off. But clearly, they are intent today and tomorrow on retaking Bor.
Oh. Well, so this is all happening as these peace talks are getting underway in Ethiopia. The two sides don't even agree on how all of this started. Remind us what the claims are.
You know, spending a week in South Sudan makes you really long for a George Washington or a Nelson Mandela, both revolutionary leaders or leaders of a revolution who stepped down after first term. In South Sudan, you have a president, Salva Kiir, who spent 28 years in the bush fighting the northern enemy, Sudan, helped the country win independence. It was no doubt that he was going to win the election. But now the current conflict has really started when the handover of power comes. In 2015, there's going to be another election. Riek Machar, the deposed vice president, had announced his intention on to run. That triggered accusations on both sides. So again, I mean, you might believe one side that there was a coup. You might believe the other that there was no coup at all. The most important thing that's going on is that you have a new democracy where one leader is not interested in losing power. And so that political fight has now turned military.
Yeah. And what's the sense of how successful any talks might be?
You know, it depends who you believe. There was an article in The Guardian today that really rags on George Clooney, you know, and he says that of course, Clooney sold us, Clooney, and this was the point of the editorial, that Clooney sold us a narrative about South Sudan that was made in Hollywood.
And remind us, this is, of course, when South Sudan was still a part of Sudan, and he, of course, was part of the big humanitarian effort there. Remind us what they mean.
Oh, sure. So Clooney was active in talking about Darfur, bringing Darfur to the public consciousness, but also the larger fight that Darfur was really part of, which is the independence movement in South Sudan that's been going on for three decades. In 2011, South Sudan became the newest nation. Now people look back and say, instead of that Hollywood narrative of the poor, scrappy Christian country fighting the big, bad Muslim neighbor, that all they wanted was their independence, in fact, the truth is more complicated than in fact that there was always going to be ethnic tension that was ready to burst just as soon as independence happened. Now, I do think that that's a bit of a cruel narrative. If you believe that narrative, then certainly these peace talks are going to be a major uphill battle because you have the two largest tribes fighting each other. However, to be optimistic, there has been a great deal of international pressure, and the role of even Kenya and Ethiopia and other neighbors has been important to bring these two sides to the table. The ceasefire is the first order of business. The real hard question to work out in the peace talks is how are they going to work out this future handover of power in 2015. Right now, it's really hard to imagine campaign posters in South Sudan not leading to gunfire, but maybe 2015 is still a ways away.
Fascinating. NPR's Gregory Warner in Nairobi. Greg, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And before a break, this news note. Today's New York Times and Guardian newspapers are calling for NSA leaker Edward Snowden to be given a chance to come home safely. In fact, the Times is calling for Snowden to be called a whistleblower with all the protections that offers. Last week, Snowden made his own defense of his actions in a Christmas Day address on Britain's Channel 4.
A child born today will grow up with no conception of privacy at all. And that's a problem because privacy matters. Privacy is what allows us to determine who we are and who we want to be.
As you probably know, other news outlets, including NPR, have decided to call Snowden a leaker rather than a whistleblower. He's charged with violating the Espionage Act, and if he returns home, could face up to life in prison for stealing an estimated 1.5 million classified documents and making many of them public. The Times says, considering the enormous value of the information he's revealed and the abuses he's exposed, it's time for the U.S. to offer Mr. Snowden a plea bargain or some form of clemency, and the hope of a life advocating for greater privacy and far stronger oversight of the runaway intelligence community. Well, social media lit up in response. Here's one tweet. Dear New York Times, if Edward Snowden is a whistleblower, what is Chelsea Manning? Manning being the army soldier convicted after releasing documents. Your thoughts on the Times call to change the way the U.S. views Edward Snowden? Weigh in at hereandnow.org or tweet us. I'm at hereandnowrobin. Meghna is at Meghna WBUR. This is Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.